Make yourselves comfortable. My master will be with you shortly.
On the edge of real and cyberspace, there's one place you can go. Welcome to Nightwise.com.
Nightwise.com.
Tune tech to your way of life and let the technology work for you.
On the edge of real and cyberspace, there's one place you can go, and you found it. Welcome to Nightwise.com, the one and only podcast with hacks, tips, and tweaks for cross-platform geeks. Whether you're Windows, Linux, Mac, iOS, or Android users, we've got the tips and tricks you need to tune tech into your way of life and let the technology work for you. My name's Nightwise. For the coming half hour, I'll be your host on KW403 Storytime. For more information and the show notes, head on over to the website, www.nightwise.com, that's KNIGHTWISE.com, where you'll find the links to everything we talk about, and of course, the Nightwise.com media feed. Subscribe to this feed and get all of the Nightwise.com content, the audio and video episodes delivered straight to your favorite podcatcher, letting technology work for you and getting all of your favorite Nightwise.com content delivered automatically. If you want to get in touch with us, you can. Feedback@Nightwise.com for the classic emails, or you can find us on Twitter, Nightwise.com/Twitter, Facebook, Nightwise.com/Facebook, or Google Plus, Nightwise.com/Google Plus, all one word. If you want to interact with us, why not visit our chat room, Nightwise.com/IRC, or call the Google voicemail number that we have mentioned in the show notes a little bit later on. Hey guys and girls, welcome back to Nightwise.com. Welcome back to KW403, episode 3 of season 4. Man, time flies. It's been a very busy week on the Nightwise.com website. If you haven't visited it, we have a lot of stuff going on there. So if you are just subscribed to the podcast, make sure to visit the website. Got a lot going on right there. We have some interesting reports of one of our reporters, Stefan, who is going to check out if the Wii U is truly a revolutionary game console, and we have guest blogger McFreeze coming back with an article about an upgrade from Ubuntu 12.04 to 12.010. So there is plenty of geeky stuff to find out over at Nightwise.com. Well, it is late in the evening. I've just had a lovely cup of coffee. I've got the lights dimmed way down low, and I have a long article right in front of me on the screen. And the Nightwise.com wise guys of the days of old know what this means. It's story time. For those of you who are new, story time is when we do an episode of an article I wrote up especially for the podcast. And the only thing that you guys, girls, have to do is close your eyes and listen, because we got a little bit of a nice story for you today. Kick back and relax and, well, I don't know, listen to an old man tell tales of glories long gone as we dive into KW403 Storytime. History. And with history, I don't mean if you can answer where Napoleon got defeated, Waterloo by the way, or who was the first king of Belgium. I'm talking about computer history. 2 weeks ago, I got a phone call from an old client of mine, back from the days when I still custom-built, installed, and supported PCs. It was great to hear from him again, but I was not sure why he was calling me. "You should come down and take a look at the computer you installed here. It's making a lot of noise, and I have a trouble starting up in the morning," he explained. I was a little puzzled what system he was actually talking about until I remembered what PC he was actually referring to. I agreed to swing by, for old time's sake, and mentally started preparing for what was requested of me. Pure IT archaeology. Time to rescue a 14-year-old system. The patient in case was a 14-year-old AMD 1 GHz beige box that I'd put together myself all those years ago. After pausing to wax nostalgically over the times I'd built it, I asked its owner to boot it up and show me. After he hit the power button on the A-Open HQ40A Fool Tower, still remember the name of the parts, nothing happened.
"That's normal," the client said.
He toggled the button off and on a few times, yanked the power cord and put it back in, and bingo, she booted. The sound of this machine booting up can be compared to an older tractor. The sound of the dust-riddled fans and aging parts crescendoed into a nagging buzz that sounded like a dog that was begging to be put down. The fact this person actually worked with this machine for 8 hours a day was a credit to his patience. Either that, or he was completely deaf. After the Windows 98 screen had appeared, the client logged in, with the same password I'd given him all those years ago, and still with the illusion that in Windows 98, such things as logins and passwords actually matter. He painstakingly started up his accounting software and proudly pointed at the legacy icons and menu items.
"That's it," he said. "That's what I use every day."
When I noticed the lack of external devices, I asked him how he backed up. The blank stare I got answered that question. He didn't. Further questions like, "Do you still have the installation disks for that software?" and "Do you have a support contract with that company?" all got me the deer in the headlight looks we get from our users. The question, "Is this software and data essential to you and your company?" did get answered by a ferocious nodding of the head. Great. This thing just got real. For a moment there, I felt like Captain James T. Kirk on the bridge of the battered Enterprise in Star Trek II, where, after being blindsided by friendly fire from the Reliant, the face on the screen responsible for the attack turns out to be an enemy thought long dead. I resist the urge to ball my fist and scream, "Khan!" For this geek reference would completely surpass my client's cultural horizon, not to mention that he would start questioning my sanity. So, here was my challenge. A legacy Windows 98 system with failing hardware and business-critical software. With an aging power supply that, if some of the resistors would give out, would pump 220 volts of raw power through the delicate components who only need a meager 5 or 12 volts. Best case scenario? The power supply would melt down like Chernobyl's reactor number 4. Worst case, it would take with it every single component in the computer in a final flash of glory. Laboring beneath the metal case was a 14-year-old, original, 2-inch socket A fan by Cooler Master. Grinding away over the accumulated soot and grime of dust and nicotine, its ball bearings grinding metal on metal due to the lack of any kind of residual lubrication whatsoever. And underneath that, a very abomination of cooling technology, there sweltered a chronically overheated 1 GHz AMD Athlon, pumping every legacy bit of code through its aging but resilient single core. The specks of dust and grime protruding from the CD-ROM's drive bay door gave me no doubt as to the ability of this system to still read optical drives. Its lens covered with dust and yellow tar from cheap cigars, I would have had more luck sliding in a Braille punch card to get any data written. This system was blind. The only thing with the remote ability to communicate with the outside world was the old 3.5-inch floppy drive. I frantically tried to remember if I even had floppies around somewhere, but abandoned the thought due to the fact that their limited capacity would be unable to help me to salvage this entire system. It would be like evacuating the Titanic with 3 paper cups. So, what to do? Well, first off, I had to take away the immediate operational danger. A failing power supply and bad cooling. These posed a direct hazard to the operational system. A quick call to the local computer shop for some parts got me a kid on the other end of the line who probably even wasn't house-trained when I put this system together. I asked for an ATX power supply with enough power connectors for the ATA drives that were still in the system. When I pressed on to say I needed to power at least 3 ATA devices, I got a funny pause on the other end of the line and a mumble that sounded like, "What the hell does this guy want?" When I drove over to pick up the parts, I felt like I was walking into some kind of candid camera gag. The squeamishly young store rep recognized me from the phone call when I said hello. "Hey, you're here to pick up those old parts," he said. But he didn't say it in a casual way. More of a, "You have come for the treasures buried by the ancients." As he popped into the back, 2 junior techs ogled me from their workbenches. Since one of them was desperately trying to grow both a mustache and some manners, I decided to be polite and nodded at them. "You're here for that socket A cooler, right?" he giggled. "Dude, I haven't seen a socket A before." When I pointed out that this was due to the fact that back then, when socket A processors still existed, his entire field of view centered around his mother's right nipple due to breastfeeding, he nodded, rushed off, and probably decided never to talk to a customer again. Getting the parts presented to me on the counter by our young Ensign Chekhov here, I could not help but notice a thin layer of dust coating the box of the optical drive, which must have been excavated from the dark realms of the computer shop's storeroom.
"Well, what you gonna do with that?" the kid asked.
I outlined my debacle of trying to keep a Windows 98 system alive and halfway through caught myself sounding like the old version of Indiana Jones, recalling stories of days long gone. Explaining to him this system was 14 years old and still in operation did not get me any looks of awe or hero worship. Just a remark that his cell phone had probably more storage and CPU power than the entire beige box I was trying to fix. In my mind, I set up a virtual version of the Angry Birds game setup and pictured how nice it would be to catapult this youngling into a brick wall for all his smart remarks. In his mind's eye, I grabbed my cane and wobbled out of the stall. Back in the cigar smoke infested den that was my client's office, I popped the hood of the system after gently powering it down from its agitated state of operations and got to work. Even though it had been a while since I did a custom-built computer, the skills of rerouting power cables, folding flat cables, and wiggling loose ATA connectors came back to me like riding a bike. I felt a sense of nostalgia when reunited with my old handiwork, the work of a younger man, a man who lived in a small apartment he'd just moved in with his girlfriend. I remember the frequent trips to the German city of Aachen to pick up the parts for these machines that I put together for friends and family, ordering via the net and exchanging Belgian francs for German marks at the back and in order to be able to pay it cash. The taste of coffee and cheesecake we used to have in this little cafe at the Dutch border, a tradition we had after every run we did to Aachen in order to dump our superfluous German coins. But the force of habit and its swift motoric memory made sure that my reverie did not last that long. The replacement parts that had been fitted, the clogged up and dying fans had been removed, and the machine once again purred like a kitten, covered up in duct tape. The reality was that I just swapped out the parts that were easy to replace. Should the hard drive die or the motherboard give out, there would be no way to resurrect this system and its legacy software. Backups would only give you copies of the data, not the application or the entire system. With no installation disks, no support contract, or no subsequent versions of the software ever to be released again, what could I do? What would Scotty do? My geek mind raced, and with the good-natured father figure of Captain Montgomery Scott came the solution to my problem. Think back to the Next Generation episode where Scotty needs to survive in the crashed ship of the Janolan while trying to survive with dying life support systems. He decides to beam himself into the transport buffer and set the device on an infinite diagnostic loop, preserving his bits in stasis until rescued by the Enterprise. The solution would be very easy. Virtualize the entire system with VMware Converter and then reawaken that entire virtual machine on a recent system as a virtual machine, preserving the very essence and soul of the base box and giving it an infinite lifespan as something that could be compared to a holodeck character in virtual machine software. But how do I get it on there? Floppy disks are way too small. USB mass storage devices, the things we call USB sticks right now, aren't recognized in the first version of Windows 98 without adding additional drivers. This system wasn't even connected to the internet. Now what? The snag with operations like this is that the simplest things take the longest. Finding the mass storage device driver plus the VMware converter was quite a bit of a chore. Burning these two tiny, tiny files to a CD-ROM seemed like a waste of space, but it was all I could do. I even needed to get my external CD-ROM drive from the car because my laptop doesn't even have a CD-ROM anymore. But thanks to the newly replaced CD-ROM drive, I was at least able to get some external information onto the system. The good news was that the USB driver install went without a hitch. The system now recognized USB mass storage devices. The VMware converter decided to give me the finger by no longer supporting Windows 98. No virtualization possible. Now what? The solution I came up with was a little rougher around the edges. I burned a copy of Clonezilla to a CD-ROM and popped in my 16GB USB stick. I gently rebooted the machine, and after what seemed like an eternity, I was presented with the colorful command line interface of Clonezilla that I had just booted from a bootable CD-ROM. The plan was simple. Clone the system, make a blank virtual machine on another system, and restore the clone into the empty virtual machine. Seems simple, but I did have my doubts about the entire idea. Putting a Windows 98 install to sleep, copying it bit by bit, and then reawakening it in what can only be called a new era might cause the kernel to bork up and spray blue screens of death, like a hyperactive infant with a reflux problem. Would this even work? Is this even possible? Laws of physics be damned. There was only one way to find out. It took me a fair while to figure out the cryptic description Clonezilla uses for partitions, drive letters, source and destination drives. I was on edge, knowing that a slip-up on my part could wipe the precious drive with rows of meaningless bits, as an error on my part could have swapped source and destination locations. Before I pressed start on the cloning process, I informed my client of the risks and explained to him the delicacy of the operation and the fact that this possibly would not work and could even go horribly wrong. Like a surgeon informing a patient's family, I dumbed it down in terms he could understand. The computer was dying. The system and the information on it needed to be saved. In the half hour it took me for the image to be copied over, I installed VirtualBox on my client's new laptop. Trying to explain virtualization to him didn't get me anywhere. The more I talked about a virtual image and cloning, the more nervous he became. Anxious looks at the Clonezilla progress bar on the screen and mumbling terms like, "Perhaps the old machine has some more years in it," tipped me off that the client was getting restless and did not get my technobabble. In a final attempt, I blurted out, "The tower is dying, so I'm saving its soul. And your laptop is going to be its afterlife where it can live forever." Expecting the word blasphemy to be uttered at any second, I thought my graphical imagination might have taken it a step too far. But the client nodded and said, "Uh-huh." And he got his wife. "He's going to save the computer's soul," I heard him exclamate in the background to his beloved better half, who makes a mean senseo whenever I come over. Facing the screen, I could not help but smile at the remark. "Still a way to go to the kingdom of heaven," I warned them. Noticing the crucifix on the office wall, I realized that this kind of analogies were right up their alley. The virtual heaven I had laid out in the form of an empty virtual machine packed twice as much disk space as was available on the physical machine and about four times as much memory. To be conservative, I only assigned one core to the virtual machine and was vaguely reminded of the low CPU-powered Linux distros like Puppy Linux, who would be right at home in these parameters. But instead, I was porting over a 14-year-old Windows 98 install with all of its data included. Times change. I gave the guy on the cross a little wink and rebooted the virtual machine on my client's laptop, hoping that my gamble would pay off. And it did. The virtual machine booted up with the Windows 98 boot screen, and pretty soon its Windows 98 Plus Pack wallpaper stared back at me from my client's laptop. The old beige box in the background, with the exact same image on the old CRT monitor, flickered back at me. A fresh cup of unsolicited senseo told me that even the madam of the house was pleased with the outcome as my client rattled away in the virtual machine. He was trying it out, so I only heard comments of, "Okay, it's a lot faster. It's exactly the same. Everything works." I wrapped up by taking a snapshot of the virtual machine state and instructed my client to do that action at least once a week. Instead of making a backup of the data, why not make a snapshot of the entire state of the virtual machine? It would be fast, easy, and effective. To be on the safe side, I made a complete copy of the virtual machine on an external disk and told him to keep it safe. The only thing left to do was to power down the beige tower. As I clicked the start button for the final shutdown, I felt like a vet putting down an old dog, relieving it from its physical sorrows, but still saddened by the loss. That day, I'd been reminded what it was like when I was a fresh cadet on board the starship of IT professionals. I had felt old, like a general put out to pasture. I'd felt excited, anxious, relieved, and proud as I eyed the very soul of the machine I put down on the laptop right next to it. Time flows fast, and nothing is more worthless than an obsolete computer system. But we should treat them with a little respect, for they represent a step on the ladder in our professional life, or a stepping stone in the climb to knowledge and experience. They are a tribute to who we were back then, and should not be thrown out and forgotten just like that. Nostalgia is like cold coffee. It tastes nice for a sip, but it's way past its point of consumption. There's no need to wallow in one's own reverie. With the machine powered down for the final time and its eternal soul living happily in the holodeck of VirtualBox, there was nothing more to do than to say goodbye. I was tempted to say yes when the client offered me the old tower as a souvenir, but times change and we need to move on. I advised him to hang on to it. You never know when it might come in handy. As I drove home, I pulled out my cell phone, booked a table online via the internet at a local restaurant, Skyped Niana that I was on my way home, and used the onboard GPS to extrapolate my exact time of arrival. It may seem high-tech, but 14 years from now, I'll think the exact same thing about today's technology. Thank you. that's all we have time for this week on the Edge of Real and Cyberspace. Hope you enjoyed our little story about resurrecting a Windows 98 system that is more than 14 years old. It was a nice experience. I decided to do a little write-up about it. And why not do it into a story time? Because once in a while, story time is always nice to listen to. Can't be geeky every week. So that's about all we have time for, except for the fact that we'll do the rundown of the feedback that we got. Question of the week this week on Twitter was, what was your first flavor of Linux that you tried? And you can follow the question of the week by replying with hashtag KWQOW. Got some interesting replies. Several people, amongst Eric, replied they had actually installed Slackware as their first system, which was pretty courageous. David DeBlog says Ubuntu, of course, then Mint RT. And Morning went back to the days of 1999 with SUSE 7.1, to which he actually bought the box and the books. Talk about legacy. The KWPOW is a picture of the week question where we say, share us, give us your nerdiest wallpapers for this week's picture of the week. And McFreeze, also guest blogger on Nightwise.com, had a great wallpaper up from the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, showing the nice thumb in the middle of the screen. So make sure, McFreeze, that you've got your towel and your bathrobe with you at any time, because Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy is a great book and a movie, but I didn't really like the remake. I like the old series. That's just because perhaps I'm old. Speaking of old, what is not old is our Google Voice number. If you want to get back to us and give us a voicemail, and you are in the US, you can call +1 218-262-9237. That is 218-2-CYBER. If you want to leave us a voicemail, or you can just send us an email, feedback@nightwise.com, or you can look us up on Voxer, V-O-X-E-R, and give us a walkie-talkie shout-out on that very application. So we'll be back in the next episode with more techie stuff. Until then, it's time to let technology work for you instead of the other way around, and use our hacks, tips, and tweaks to, you know, be cross-platform geeks. See you guys on the flip side. Don't forget to visit the website with more articles that you can shake a stick at from talented people like others, and perhaps also a little bit like me. But we'll see each other in the next KW Nightwise.com podcast. See you guys. Bye-bye.